Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon. In his latest in a really interesting special report series on polarization, state polarization leaves troubling legacy. In today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Craig Gilbert, the reporter, asked these questions, and these are the questions that he will answer this hour. Why is it that the party that utterly dominates state government is incapable of winning a presidential campaign in Wisconsin? Why did the party that swept to the top of the ticket races for Senate and president in 2012 lose the majority of this state's legislative and congressional races, the Democrats? How could the same state in the space of 2 years elect the political odd couple of Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson to the U.S. Senate? And how could the same state in the space of 5 months vote for Scott Walker and Barack Obama? Craig Gilbert is Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and has spent the last 6 months doing an exhaustive analysis of voting trends in metropolitan Milwaukee. He had a six-month fellowship that was established by the Marquette University Law School, Lubar Fund for Public Policy Research. And one of his special reports is the front page today's paper, State's Polarization Leaving Troubling Legacy. There are others in this series, and tomorrow, a major conference at Marquette, Dividing Lines, Political Polarization, and What It Means for Campaigns, Public Policy, and Political Engagement. It's pretty much sold out, but don't worry, we'll tell you during this hour how you can see it online. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I would imagine we'll have quite a few on this issue. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Craig.
Good morning, or good day.
Good day to you. Holy Toledo, are we divided? I mean, we are divided.
You probably knew that already.
Yeah, but it's remarkable.
Yeah, one thing that was neat about doing this project for me, having covered politics for a long time in Wisconsin and writing about this stuff, and obviously we've been through a lot of upheaval in the last few years, was the chance to really compare this area, this state, and this area to other parts of the country, and also look at what the changes have been over time, because you forget. I mean, when you've been doing this for a while, you kind of forget how things have changed. Mm-hmm. And for probably younger voters who may not know what politics was like, how much different it was 20 years ago than it is today. But comparing, putting Milwaukee and Wisconsin in a national context was a big part of this project, looking at other big metro areas around the country. And we are unusual. I mean, there's no one way to measure polarization, so you can't say we're the most polarized place in the country. We're, by many measures, I think we're arguably the most polarized place in a swing state. And the numbers are pretty dramatic in terms of the landscape and where Democrats and Republicans live and the degree to which they live apart and the degree to which they're very concentrated in very lopsided political neighborhoods. No matter how you slice it, the numbers are pretty stark.
And the consequences of this, unfortunately, for us in this state is that we don't seem to be able to agree on much of anything. So you'll rarely see Republicans and Democrats say, we need to address the issue of unemployment. We need to address all kinds of issues, be it, water usage or transportation or whatever. Everybody sort of carved into his own area, own territory, and we don't sit down at the same table and say, what do we need to give?
Yeah, and the irony, or maybe the tragedy, is that it's not like there's no common ground on any issue. I mean, if you look at a lot of the polling that Marquette has done, these divisions aren't dramatic on every public policy question. I mean, there are issues even like immigration where people are not as polarized as you might think. But the divisions that do exist tend to fall along kind of party lines, and anything that becomes defined as a partisan issue becomes very polarizing. And certainly the divisions between Democrats and Republicans are bigger than they've ever been before. When you look at the state of Wisconsin and the polling data that I've looked at, we're clearly one of the most polarized states by party. If you look at the gap between how Democrats and Republicans view President Obama and how they view their own governor and compare it to other states, we're at the top of the list. And then you look at Milwaukee and you look at where people live, and by that measure, it's, you know, we're very starkly divided compared to certainly any other metro area outside the South. We're right at the top of that list as well.
Yeah. So do you explain in large measure Senator Tammy Baldwin and Senator Ron Johnson? Can you say 90% of it is because of who turns out midterm, who turns out presidential voting year?
That's a lot of it. It's several things. One, we're an evenly divided state. So the difference between electing a Democrat and a Republican is not a big one. It doesn't require a big swing. And so that's one explanation. Another is that, you know, the political climate shifts. Obviously, 2010 was a big wave year and it was a very conservative electorate, and 2012 was different. But a big piece of it is the presidential electorate is different from the midterm electorate. And this is true nationally. It's truer. The difference is bigger in some states than other states. And it has a lot to do with these different outcomes, because in a presidential year when the turnout is higher, you have a lot of Democratic voters who are more casual voters, and they tend to be younger. They tend to be minority voters, unmarried women. There are groups that don't vote as consistently across elections, and they're more Democratic than Republican. So the Democrats have a bigger fall off in midterm elections. And so the electorate in 2012 was more diverse and it was younger than the electorate in 2010. As a result, it was more helpful to Democrats in 2012 and more helpful to Republicans in 2010.
Why is there more of a Democratic fall off in midterms?
It's the demographics of the support. And so, again, when you're talking about a big part of the Democratic coalition, younger voters, students, they tend to be more mobilized and more engaged in presidential years than other years. And the same thing is true, generally speaking, of African-American voters. So that's just a fact of life. I mean, Republican voters tend to be higher income, and that those and higher income voters tend to be more consistent voters. So these things are not concrete rules. I mean, it doesn't mean the Democrats can't win a midterm election. It doesn't mean Republicans can't win a presidential election. Obviously, the Democrats won the 2006 midterm. And if you go back to the 2004 presidential election in Wisconsin, it was razor thin, as was 2000. But they do matter, and they do help explain these kind of, you know, the sort of these seemingly odd outcomes within a short period of time.
So if you looked at all the eligible voters in the state of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and for some miraculous reason, everybody decided to vote in a midterm that's coming up this fall, I've heard that more people in the state may be naturally Democratic than they are Republican, but they don't vote. If everybody voted, mm-hmm. what would you have?
Well, my guess is that scenario would favor Democrats. It doesn't mean they would win every election, but when you look at what happened in 2012 and you look at, you look at these really Republican counties that I'm writing about, like Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington, they're kind of maxing out. I mean, they're basically turning out at a rate that nowhere else in America is turning out. If you look at the presidential election, I mean, almost universal turnout, 90%, 85%. Ozaukee County,
wow.
Ozaukee County had the highest turnout in the country of any county above 50,000 in population. And Waukesha was tied for second.
So amazing.
They are just generating. And then when you look at the Republican turnout and you look at the, you know, Mitt Romney got a higher percentage of eligible voters in Waukesha County than any county in America of over 50,000 people. And Ozaukee and Washington were in the top four. So they are just ultra mobilized. And so they max out, but the Democratic base counties, Dane County is also maxed out on the Democratic side. I mean, it's right at the top of that list on the Democratic side. But Milwaukee isn't. It's among urban counties, it's off the charts, but it's not voting at quite the levels these other places are. And so it makes a big difference for Democrats when they can raise that ceiling. And suddenly you had in the two Obama elections, if you look at the vote in Milwaukee County, the margins, 170,000 vote winning margin in Milwaukee County, like nothing we'd ever seen before. It's very difficult for Republicans to keep up with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Democrats are just blowing them out, there aren't really enough votes in these smaller counties to compensate, to make up for that. If you have massive margins and massive turnouts in places like Milwaukee and Madison and smaller cities too. So it's a problem for Republicans, and a lot of Republicans are pretty pessimistic about their ability to carry the state in presidential years under those circumstances and without cutting in somewhat to that Democratic coalition mm-hmm. because of the numbers game we're talking about. Mm-hmm.
So some would say, well, what we need to do is reach African-American and Hispanic voters. Some Democrats would say what you're trying to do is suppress voters.
Well, that's the debate over things like photo ID and over like early voting and Sunday voting. And Democrats certainly see that as an effort to hold down Democratic turnout. It's very political. And that's why we're having big fights in the courts over this. You had Rand Paul the other day, actually, the New York Times reporting, saying that Republicans should back off of this issue because they're alienating these voters. And so there actually is some evidence, and a lot of people think that there was – that part of the reason these turnouts, the African-American turnouts, were so robust in 2012 was kind of a backlash against the voter ID stuff that people were – and certainly the messaging on the Democratic side in mobilizing voters was they don't want you to vote, so
exactly.
So go vote.
Yep.
And that appeared to have been an effective message. So that's part of – you know, again, that's one of the points I was trying to make in the story is when the makeup of the electorate matters so much – and it matters so much because the parties are getting their support from different kinds of voters in different kinds of communities, then you get into these battles over voting, and voting rules have huge political consequences.
Mm-hmm. You wrote a lot today about what's happened with redistricting, mm-hmm. and it's pretty remarkable how many seats are competitive at all. They almost don't exist anymore.
They don't exist in this part of the state, and there's not a ton of them in the rest of the state, but in this part of the state in particular – it's, you know, one reason is that the geography is so polarized. So you have people largely living in one-sided Democratic or Republican neighborhoods. And so you can create competitive districts by basically, you know, including both red and blue communities in the same district. And districts like that existed, for example, in the state Senate. There were a bunch of them before the last redistricting. But in the new map, the new Republican map, they got rid of those seats and essentially created more safe seats and kind of locked in a Republican advantage, because the great thing the Republicans have going for them in terms of the political geography is the Democratic voters are more concentrated geographically in cities. So it's very easy to draw a smaller number of extremely Democratic districts where that vote is packed in. There are fewer Democratic voters to go around, and as a result, the Republicans control more districts, and the Democratic districts are like 90% Democratic, and the Republican districts are like 60% Republican. And as a result, you have more Republican districts than Democratic districts in an area where there are roughly equal numbers of voters. And when you think about the fact that Mitt Romney carried the majority of assembly districts, the majority of Senate districts, and the majority of congressional districts in Wisconsin, a state that he lost by 7 points, that tells you what the makeup of these districts is, and it tells you how daunting it is for Democrats in those kinds of elections. I mean, even in a year where they won the two big top – when people were voting Democratic, more people were voting Democratic, it wasn't because a lot of voters were splitting their tickets down ticket and voting for Tammy Baldwin, Barack Obama, and then a Republican congressman and a Republican state legislator. That wasn't the reason you had different outcomes mm-hmm. at the congressional legislative level. The reason was the districts.
Mm-hmm. So in order for anything to become competitive again, for this whole state to change, to become, you know, where you go to vote, it truly is competitive. You stay up at night, you see who's going to win. You don't know who's going to win before. What has to change? Does it have to be vast desegregation? Has to change?
Well, you could always draw different lines. But again, that doesn't. You still have the geography, and as long as people are living as long as people are politically segregated, mm-hmm. it creates issues for drawing the lines. It makes it hard to draw a neutral map, for one thing. And then again, if you want to draw competitive districts, then they have to be these very polarized districts. I mean, the classic example was in 2008, the race which pitted Sheldon Wasserman against Alberta Darling, which included, you know, an increasingly Democratic North Shore, and then it included parts of Washington, Ozaukee, and Waukesha County, which are very Republican. It was basically a 50-50 district. It was a 50-50 race, but that district was changed after that election to make it safer for Republicans. But again, I mean, that may not be a perfect solution, creating districts like that, because it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get more moderate lawmakers. If you have a district that's made up of really partisan Democratic neighborhoods and really partisan Republican neighborhoods, you're going to get either a really partisan Democrat or a really partisan Republican, probably. One of them is going to win. And the incentives are still going to be there to sort of play to that base, whichever party you're in.
And as a result of that, do we have virtually no action on issues that are important to the people who live in the state?
Well, I guess, you know, voters can judge that for themselves, how much action they're getting. I think there clearly are big obstacles. Now, if you have obviously one party rule, that's not an obstacle to action. It's an obstacle. It may be an obstacle to sort of bipartisan action. Mm. But, I mean, that's been one of the big trends in the last few election cycles across the country has been the rise of one-party rule. And while Wisconsin is still kind of a purple state, one reason that we're seeing an increase in one-party rule is because you've got redder and bluer states and fewer purple states. And so they're producing, you know, you're getting Democratic unified government in the blue states and unified Republican government in the red states. And so you're getting lots of action. And it may be action that a lot of people want in those states. If you're in a Republican state and you're a Republican, you may be happy that North Carolina is doing a lot of Republican things. And you're a Democrat in Minnesota, you may be happy that mm-hmm. Minnesota is doing a lot of Democratic things. Wisconsin's a little different case because we're a pretty divided state. But we have Republican rule, and so Republicans are doing things that Republicans like, and obviously Democrats don't, and so you're getting a lot of division over that.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Craig Gilbert is our guest. You probably have been keeping track because you're a politically aware audience of his series. He's been spending a long time on this project. It's done by Marquette University Law School Lubar Fund for Public Policy Research. And Craig has been producing this special report. He's been working on it for 6 months now. Today is the final?
Yes.
Today is the final. State's polarization leaves troubling legacy. Tomorrow there's a major conference at Marquette University on all of this, which is sold out, but you can stream this at the Journal Sentinel website or at the Marquette Law School, the Dividing Lines Conference, which also will be interesting. Political polarization and what it means for campaigns, public policy, and political engagement. What does it mean for you? And we're interested in hearing how you think that this kind of polarization plays out in terms of policy, in terms of bipartisanship, in terms of what's good for a state. Do you think that it's likely to last for a long period of time? We welcome your thoughts, particularly those of you who have lived through maybe different periods of political rule in the state of Wisconsin. We welcome your calls at 1-800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. As Craig writes in today's piece, there are more than 1.5 million people in metropolitan Milwaukee, yet few can expect to cast a truly meaningful vote in a congressional election in the fall. They likely won't cast a meaningful vote in a state Senate election this fall either, or a state assembly election. There are practically no competitive seats in the most populous part of this competitive swing state, and there are lots of ramifications. So that's what we're talking about. To you in a moment, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, Craig Gilbert is our guest. We go to phone calls. We got a ton of them coming in, and let's start with Ellen in Bayview. Hi, Ellen. Hi, Helen. Ellen.
Hi.
I'm
just sitting here lamenting the fact that I feel like my state has been taken away from me. I feel like this is a state where the progressive idea was almost born here, and that, you know, with Bob La Follette and all the great people that have come from the state and worked with the state. I mean, I can remember when we had a mayor in Milwaukee that was a socialist, for God's sake. It just seems unbelievable to me. I live in the county of Milwaukee, and I remember when Scott Walker was our executive, and I wasn't happy about that either. But I just don't get it.
All right. Well, you need to read Craig's columns, and then you'll figure out his whole report of why it's happening. But along with the progressive tradition in the state, which, you know, one could say was probably a little bit stronger than the Joseph McCarthy tradition.
But we do have these different traditions in Wisconsin. I mean, we've got a lot of interesting traditions. We've had a lot of different party movements in this state over time. She mentioned one of them, which was kind of German socialism or sewer socialism. We've got strong conservative traditions and strong liberal or progressive traditions. And so, I mean, everybody kind of goes right to the how can the same state produce Bob La Follette and Joe McCarthy. But again, you know, look around today, and you've got, you know, we've talked about Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson. They're probably the most disparate senators in any one state. Obviously, Governor Walker, you know, Russ Feingold until recently, Tommy Thompson, just an interesting array of characters across the spectrum. I don't know if that's necessarily unique to Wisconsin, but I think it's a pretty rich, diverse, politically diverse tradition. But it's always been too simple to say, you know, Wisconsin is a liberal state, for example, when people are focused on, you know, the going back to the La Follette and the progressive era and the modern day dominance for a while of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin. There's always been these different strains, and I think that's part of the story here.
Why is there such a strong strain, a very conservative Republicanism? When you mentioned all those people, I was thinking of conservative, more mainstream, if those are words we can use, Pat Lucey, Tommy Thompson, very different kinds of politicians. Certainly Tommy Thompson, it wasn't that long ago when you look at he reached across the aisle.
Yeah. I mean, we've had people across the spectrum. I mean, a lot of this is just a change that has kind of top-down change in our politics. Obviously, the two parties have polarized. They've moved apart, and obviously, the Republican Party has certainly moved to the right over time. We know that from studies of congressional voting behavior. The Democratic Party has probably not moved as far as the Republican Party has moved if you go back to where the Democratic Party was in the 60s and 70s, but it sort of lost its southern wing, which was a source of conservatives within and centrists within the Democratic Party, just as the Republican Party has lost, you know, kind of its northeastern wing, which was a moderating influence on the Republican Party. And now, you know, these divisions are much more nationalized than they were before. And so a lot of what you see in a state like Wisconsin is driven by kind of the national realignment of the parties, and those are pretty fun. Those are pretty persistent trends and pretty deeply rooted trends that are not going to go away anytime soon, I don't think. I mean, they're, you know, when you look at how state legislatures have polarized and how Congress has polarized, that's been going on for decades.
Thank you very much, Ellen, for the call. And I guess, Ellen, you know, when you listen to her, it's kind of a shame that people feel that they don't have much ownership in some politicians, that they feel so estranged from their government. We don't really want to live that way, do we, to be that estranged?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, whenever you're on the losing side of an election, you may feel that way to some extent. But I think it's more dramatic today, again, because you had the lines weren't as defined and they weren't as dramatic and they weren't as sharp. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned Tommy Thompson. Well, Tommy Thompson, you know, in 1994, Tommy Thompson won Milwaukee County by 30 points. I mean, try to wrap your mind around that. He won Dane County in 1994. So you had people in both parties still kind of, you know, getting votes from people in the other party and getting and doing reasonably well on the other side's terrain, and that's what's disappeared. Mm-hmm. I mean, the ticket splitting has been in a free fall. You see it on the map. You see it in the exit polls. People are not crossing those lines anymore.
Let's go to Mike in Franklin. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Yeah, what bothered with all this partisanship, what really bothers me is that last law that was passed as far as limiting voting. I mean, our the people in Milwaukee County and Dane County and that, those legislators, I mean, those like mayors and that, what they need to do, what they have to do is put out the thing that's available so just about all their people can vote. And when you have people, okay, from northern Wisconsin and the Republicans just going in and just taking that right away because of some kind of, you know, baloney issue that they call fairness, it doesn't make any sense. I lived in a small town. Guess what? You don't have to have voting on Saturday and Sunday. But now I live in Milwaukee. I live in a big city, and we need this. And it wouldn't happen, and this is what bothers me, okay? It wouldn't happen if we weren't as partisan and if Governor Walker, okay, would be looking out for all the states. What should be important is that everybody should get the vote, and people in different areas are going to need more opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call, Mike.
Well, yeah, that's one of these issues we've been talking about, which is Sunday voting, early voting. It's an issue. It's something that Democrats feel is important to them in terms of getting their vote out. Obviously, you know, no party changes the voting rules in ways they think are going to hurt that party. And so these things are never separated from partisan politics. And this is a battle that you're seeing across the country. You're seeing it in other states as well. This probably applies more to photo ID than it applies to early voting, but it may end up being decided in court.
Mm-hmm. You write in today's Dividing Lines, demographic and generational changes like the small but growing Hispanic population in Waukesha County could eventually soften some of the stark geographic dividing lines. But the political gap between the area's red and blue communities will remain large as long as the gap between the parties remains large. There has been some talk that the Tea Party is not as strong this midterm as it was, that we're seeing more, even in some of the elections already, more moderate Republicans rather than Tea Party challengers winning races. Do you see that happening right now, that the gap between the parties may be narrowing a little bit?
No,
or not?
I mean, I think we're going to have to wait a long time to sort of know whether that's actually happening or not. I think, you know, there's no real sign in the polling that that's happening.
Really?
If you look at the legislative polarization, you look at Congress and the difference between the gap between how Democrats and Republicans are voting in Congress, that just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, there could be, eventually parties change. And, you know, one of the concerns, for example, within the Republican Party is, again, the concern is about how they're performing at the presidential level. And yet they can continue to have success at the congressional level, even while they're losing presidential elections. And this is a big dilemma for people in the Republican Party as to what sort of has to change to make them more competitive at the presidential level, and whether the incentives are there because the party's continued success at the congressional level.
Jay in Madison, hi.
Hi, is this me?
Yeah, hi, Jay.
Hi. I had a question for your guest about the experiment they're doing in California, where they eliminated partisan primaries and just made it so you could have multiple people from the same party win the primary and go on to the general election, with the idea that that would help centrists and more crossover voting. Wonder if there's any statistics on that or if you've heard of any trends. I'll hang up and
all right, Jay. Thank you.
So I haven't studied that. There is a lot of discussion about, you know, whether there are kind of ways you can change the process to kind of get around the partisan polarization, because it's sort of the combination of the partisan polarization and the way our political system works that creates so much paralysis, if you think about it. I mean, we've got a presidential system and because we elect people by districts. If the rules were different, it might not be such a problem. In parliamentary systems, you elect a party, right? And they run things, and you don't have divided government, and they get their shot, and then they get voted in or out after they've done their thing. A lot of the trends we're talking about have a tendency to kind of increase the probability of divided government because, again, we've got Republicans with a structural advantage in the House and Democrats with kind of a demographic advantage when it comes to the presidential election. So we're almost doomed to divide a government if those trends continue. And because the parties are so divided, divided government is a recipe for paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you get discussions about reforming the system. It's just that it's so hard to do those kinds of reforms because they have such big political consequences that it's not likely we're going to see changes like that.
Don in Superior. Hi, Don.
Hi. I'd like to ask a question. Is how much do you think the out-of-state money that has flowed into the state has had a difference on both parties?
Well, that's a good question. I didn't write a lot about that in this series, but it's a fair question and a fair issue. I mean, the money obviously plays a role, and, you know, even when you talk to people in the political parties who, you know, obviously they have their differences with each other, but they on both sides, there's kind of a lot of hand-wringing about the outside money when it comes to the interest groups, when it comes to the these nonprofits, when it comes to the independent groups, because they feel like they're not only kind of undercutting the parties, but they're or hijacking campaigns, but they're also driving people to the extremes. And so, again, this is another one of those issues where you can talk about reforming these systems, but then you bump up against the decisions that the courts are producing about which have really constrained, really limited the options when it comes to campaign finance regulation. Right. Whatever you think about the merits of that kind of legislation, mm-hmm. it's harder and harder to do that. And so the money is playing a bigger and bigger role.
Thanks very much for the call. I want to go back to this, the issues that are of importance to a region and how this partisanship keeps us from dealing with them. I've lived in Milwaukee long enough to remember when there was a lot of talk about metropolitan government right. and sharing schools and sharing resources. And, boy, that's really something of the past. But you write about, and people will be reminded of other issues, light rail, water is certainly an issue. I'm right. wondering if water can bring us together. Housing, stadium taxes, regularly reopened fundamental questions about the relationship of city to suburbs and the centrality of a city to the economy and culture of a metropolitan area. I really do believe there is some truth to this, that people feel Milwaukee, you know, that the rest of the state is it doesn't understand the importance of this big city to the whole state and certainly not to the region. We all live pretty close together, and to not be able to work on the city's unemployment and include the outside region and how to get to work and right. for Waukesha to be concerned about water with Lake Michigan here, right. there are all these issues that, of course, it's in our best interest to talk to each other because we're neighbors. We're close neighbors.
Yeah, and these aren't obviously, it's not a new thing that we have these right. divisions. I mean, you can go back to annexation in the 50s and the 60s and desegregation, the sewer wars we talked about. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that have divided the city from some suburbs. But one thing that's changed is that those divisions are now kind of lined up more sharply with these very deep partisan divisions. And so I think they're a little bit more intractable than they were. And some metro areas have had more success than others in doing things collaboratively, whether because they have a different structure. I mean, it's very fragmented here. You've got all these different levels of government and all these different, 90 different municipalities in Metro Milwaukee and then the county governments, and they all kind of line up with these political differences. But so some, you've got a place like Indianapolis, which has sort of metro government. Mm-hmm. You have other places like Indianapolis, which has metro government, and other places like Minneapolis, which have some regional authorities which have more teeth than Milwaukee does. And so some places are considered by people who believe in regional policymaking models, and whereas Milwaukee would be more toward the other end of the extreme where there seem to be a lot of barriers to doing that. And obviously there are differences of opinion about whether that should be done at all.
Craig Gilbert is our guest this hour. His very important study it culminates actually in a conference tomorrow, but the last of his writing is in today's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The series is Dividing Lines. He's been working on this, and it's very, very complete. And if you want an analysis of what's going on with voting and partisanship and why it is that we've had Senator Ron Johnson and Senator Tammy Baldwin or Barack Obama and Scott Walker winning elections in the very same state, how can that be? He'll give you the answer. So tomorrow there's going to be this major conference at Marquette University, and you can see it online. It's already filled, which is a good thing, and I hope there will be a lot of bipartisan conversation there. But it's on the Journal Sentinel website and also Marquette University Law School. And when does it start, really, Craig? Is it 8:30 is a welcome, 9 o'clock start streaming?
I think it starts around 8:30, but I...
Who else talking? I'm sure.
I'll be kicking it off. And Charles Franklin, who I should say, I worked pretty closely with on this project. We did a lot of data analysis together and research. He did a lot of numbers crunching for us. We had his poll, his survey, his database of polling available to us, which was a great resource. So it was a great experience for me to be able to sort of work closely with someone, a political scientist and a pollster, and bring all of that to the project. He's going to be talking, and then we've got a couple of people from the kind of practical political world. Paul Maslin, who's a pollster on the Democratic side, and Mark Rawl, who's a Republican consultant, has run big campaigns in the state. And we've got a couple of academics, political scientists who are from Wisconsin, but one of whom is now at BU, Katie Einstein, and one of whom is now at Stanford, Clayton Nall, who study this stuff and look at it and also know the state. And then we've got local officials as well. So I think it'll be a pretty kind of – it'll be a great discussion from a lot of different perspectives.
Do you have a goal? I mean, do you hope at the end of the day that people will realize that the partisanship is so great that maybe there should be something else?
Well, I guess my goal, the way I look at it is, you know, this series, you could think of it as kind of a starting point maybe for a discussion. I mean, it certainly doesn't answer all the questions about why, and it certainly doesn't, answer all the questions about where to go from here. And so I think it's just – it could – you know, if it could serve as a starting point for sort of a discussion like the one we've been having, then I think that's useful, and maybe that discussion will start tomorrow.
Yeah. More phone calls. Here's how you reach us. Our lines have been jammed. You can get through right now, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Craig Gilbert is our guest. He joins us fairly often, and we've been anticipating the work that he has been producing on Dividing Lines. He's Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and has spent 6 months doing this analysis, very complete, very thorough and well-written analysis of voting trends in metropolitan Milwaukee. The fellowship that he had was established by the Marquette University Law School Lubar Fund for Public Policy Research. And today there is a front page story. There have been other stories, two other stories. Let me look at the dates. I got the newspapers right here. Sunday, May 11th, front page story, and Sunday, May 4th, front page story as well. So two more of your calls momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls for Craig Gilbert. Ray in Milwaukee is next. Hello, Ray.
Yeah, I want to talk about how Scott Walker came to power. He didn't come out of a vacuum. He came out of 20 or 30 years of the Democrats. I think I'm a lefty, more libertarian left right now, but I was brought up in the Democratic tradition of unions, all my family members. Everybody worked in unions. But this Tom Amant fellow running Milwaukee government or Milwaukee County government, I don't know exactly what his job was.
County executive.
I remember. Could I finish?
I was just telling you what his job was, Ray, just for a point of information. That's all.
He had a huge scandal, $1 million retirements set up for top employees in the city or the county. And that was where Scott Walker took the opportunity to step into the void. And ever since then, he's been very opportunist. In a way, him and Obama are very similar. They're very Machiavellian and they're excellent maneuverers in the political system. Maybe that's why they both won here. But I personally am sick of the monopoly of the two-party system. And this might be the perfect year to have a really strong independent candidate run.
All right. Is there a possibility of that?
You know, this conversation comes up a lot, and it has over the years, obviously with the Perot movement and other, third-party candidacies. It's just the problem is the barriers in our process are so severe to these, you know, to alternatives to the two parties that unless the rules change, it's almost doomed to failure.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Chris in Marshfield. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've only been able to be listening for about 10 minutes. I'm not sure exactly the pertinentness of this, but what we're trying to do here is to sponsor educational forums, and we're just in the process of discussion. But we have a buy-in from the Democratic Party of Wood County and the Republican Party of Wood County to sponsor these, where we will get people from both sides on the same stage at the same time, so people can come in and, you know, see both sides of an issue rather than just speaking to the choir. Too often, you know, I'm a Democrat, represent the Democratic Party, and, you know, we'll get a speaker in and, you know, we all agree. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see if have a discussion to, and hopefully get the buy-in from, you know, your undecided voters, independent voters.
What are you going to talk about, Chris?
Well, we will. That's still under discussion. But my idea was to, you know, have a forum on, you know, the Affordable Care Act or voter ID or a topic at a time, or, you know, the need for a strong government versus a weak government, you know, on either side.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just in the process of organizing this, but we do have at least buy-in, which I think is a unique part of this.
Hmm. Let us know more about that. We may be interested in following that. Is this a unique thing? People getting
it's
at the same
kind of interesting.
Table?
First, I should say it's nice to hear from Marcia. That's where my wife is from.
Aww.
And Wood County is actually a pretty purple county. And so the prospects for doing this kind of thing are probably better in a place like Wood County and in many parts of Wisconsin outside of this area than they are in this area, because, you know, I don't want people to have the impression that that Wisconsin is uniformly polarized in its political landscape and politically segregated, because if even place like Green Bay, your odds of living in a very lopsided, one-sided partisan neighborhood are dramatically lower than they are in metropolitan Milwaukee. And so people are not nearly as segregated politically in the western Wisconsin and northern Wisconsin as they are in southeastern Wisconsin. So I think there are efforts like this underway even here and in different parts of the state, and I think they're commendable.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the call. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. War, you know, going to war is the thing that's always used to suppress the people in World War One with the great liberal Democrat Wilson, you know, became very repressive during the war. La Follette almost went to jail, our old Bob La Follette, because he opposed the war. He knew it was just a waste, and it was only good for the super rich and the bankers. And then you get skipping up to 9/11 and the surprise attack at 9/11, and now we declared war on the terrorists.
All right, John, we need to get to what we're talking about.
Pardon?
Are you going to weave this into our partisan divide here?
Well, the partisan divide, there's not enough of a division. There's not enough political parties. You just have the Socialist Party, the Progressive Party, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. Even those four would not be enough to provide good debate in this country.
All right.
You know, it's interesting. There was actually a period in the 1930s when four different major parties won major statewide elections in Wisconsin, I think in the same election cycle.
Goodness.
So that is part of our history, but it's kind of a distant part of our history now. And again, you know, we have a two-party system, and it's proving to be a problem given the nature of our political system and the combination of our political climate and how it's changed. And so it's something that I don't know what it looks like 5 years from now if all these trends continue. I don't think we're going to start messing around with our political system. I just don't, because for the very reason that people are so divided, they would never be able to come to an agreement on how to reform the political process. So I think what has to change in the long run is the sort of party alignments and the kind of dynamic between the two parties for any of this to change.
Thanks very much. You spent a long time on this, and it's so well done. Were there statistics? Were there polls? Were there conversations you had with people that just astounded even you?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about doing this you know, when you're writing about Milwaukee and you're writing about Wisconsin, is that the numbers tend to jump off the page at you. I mean, you don't walk away disappointed that you haven't found anything or that you haven't found a discernible trend or pattern. It's just that, you know, when you're measuring things like polarization, when you're looking at the partisan sort of trend lines in these counties and these communities, I mean, these trends are strong, they're distinct, they're over decades in time, and Milwaukee always jumps out. Wisconsin always jumps out. And it's not all always a depressing thing. I mean, when you look at the flip side of all this division, which I wrote about in the third part of this series, is our level of engagement and activism in politics. I mean, some people worry about, and people used to worry nationally about disengagement and about lack of involvement, and turnouts were much lower 20 or 30 years ago. That's not our problem. I mean, we vote like crazy. People are interested in this subject. They're very engaged in the subject. They care. They're very passionate about it. And so you can't say that's in and of itself a bad thing, but you can certainly say that there's kind of an interplay between that involvement and interest and our level of division. And those two things seem to be feeding off of each other. So it's a kind of a complicated legacy.
Yeah. And how long – you certainly have the luxury here and privilege to take this out a few years. 5 years, you think it's pretty much the same, all the forces that are at work that you write about?
Well, I think it's the big question is whether we're going to see any shifts in the coalitions where the parties are getting their voters from. Those fault lines are really pretty dramatic right now when you look at the composition of the two parties. And so, you know, these things always change over time. And so whether that changes or not, you could have generational effects there. I think until the Republican Party figures out a way to do better with non-white voters, those fault lines are still going to be very sharp and they're going to drive a lot of the division. But, you know, what's going to happen with millennials and voters under 30 when they're 40? So these kinds of things are going to affect the dividing lines between the parties, and that's going to affect the level of polarization that we're talking about.
Yeah. One more phone call. It'll have to be quick, everybody. Mary in Washburn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. It's about redistricting. I'm wondering if you, part of your series, if you address redistricting. And my question is whether both parties are equally opportunistic, as some people say, or if the truth is in the state that the Republicans have taken it to a higher, even more profoundly unfair level.
Thank you, Mary.
I did talk about redistricting a lot today. And, you know, there's no doubt that we have a more sort of tilt partisan map than we've had in a few decades. It's not necessarily because Democrats have never tried to do this either, but the last several times this has been done, you didn't have unified control, and so it ended up in the courts, and so you had more neutral maps. You have to go back a long way to find a map that was completely dictated by Democrats. So, this is a different map, and it's also easier for Republicans to draw a tilted map because of the way the Democratic voters are concentrated. So, but you can find states where there are Democratic maps, and you can find states where there are Republican maps.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Craig. We've been anticipating. I knew you were working on this, your series, and you have not disappointed. It's so thorough and fascinating. Well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Craig Gilbert. And tomorrow, just a reminder that tomorrow is the event at Marquette University, and you can stream it, which is probably because you can't get in anymore, so you may as well stream it on JS online site or on the Marquette Law School site. Start looking at it about 8:30 tomorrow morning. That would be a good thing. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour. Thanks to Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, for his work and for being with us. And thanks for all of your calls, everybody. We have news coming up momentarily and another hour to come. A very interesting guy who has set out to change the world. Randy Lewis joining us.